From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, December 15th, 2025. Governor Janet Mills today announced she will let a bill to limit local law enforcement's cooperation with federal immigration agents become law. The bill, passed by both chambers of the state legislature earlier this year, would generally prohibit police in Maine from stopping, interrogating, or detaining someone based on immigration status alone. At the time, Mills, a Democrat, called the measure, quote, overly broad and confusing, and declined to sign it, instead holding it until the legislature reconvenes. But in an op-ed in the Portland Press-Herald today, Mills says the state cannot turn a, quote, blind eye to the Trump administration's aggressive immigration enforcement tactics, citing several examples of immigrants in Maine being taken into ICE custody despite having no criminal record. Waldo County commissioners have delayed a vote on the 2025 county budget after residents balked at the proposed 36% increase during a public hearing. Bob Keurig, chair of the Waldo County Budget Committee, says the next step is to craft a spending plan that taxpayers in 28 cities and towns will accept.
We realize our responsibility to all of the residents of Waldo County, and we certainly hear what they have to say, and we're going to be pushing to get the budget into line with county residents' expectations.
Keurig says the county's audits from the previous few years need to be completed to better understand the balance sheet. Former SpaceX engineer Philip Wrench of Waterboro is ending his U.S. Senate bid, citing an undisclosed personal development. Wrench was seeking to challenge Republican Senator Susan Collins next year as an independent and was one of the first candidates to get into the contest. Despite early press attention, his bid was eclipsed by other candidates who have built full-fledged campaign operations. Wrench made his announcement in a Facebook post on Sunday in which he lamented that social issues are dominating the debate instead of affordability. He indicated that he's interested in running for the Senate in 2030, quote, under the right conditions. A panel of Maine judges today heard oral arguments in a rare disciplinary case involving a state Supreme Court justice. It's the first such hearing of its kind in Maine and the first proceeding under newly amended judicial rules. Caitlin Bedayan reports.
At issue in the complaint brought against Justice Catherine Connors is her handling of two foreclosure cases that were brought before the law court. The Committee on Judicial Conduct determined last fall that Connors should have recused herself from those cases because of her past work on foreclosure matters as an attorney and recommended disciplinary action. John McArdle III, attorney for the committee, says by failing to recuse, Connors violated the Maine Code of Judicial Conduct because her impartiality in the cases might reasonably be questioned.
I'm not saying, and the committee's not saying, that she intentionally said, I'm going to break a rule here. I'm going to do something that breaches the rule regarding the appearance of impropriety. That's not what we're saying at all. But what we are saying is that she had a blind spot.
But James Bowie, who represents Connors, says that his client consulted with the Advisory Committee on Judicial Ethics on the issue, and that group unanimously ruled that a recusal was not necessary.
Unless recusal is in fact required, the judge is ethically required to sit and hear matters to which they are assigned.
Bowie argues that the conduct rules do not require Connors to recuse herself from every foreclosure case just because of her experience as an attorney.
Otherwise, you're saying that, you know, civil rights lawyers can't hear civil rights cases. Prosecutors shouldn't be hearing criminal cases. Criminal defense lawyers shouldn't be hearing criminal defense cases.
Bowie adds that none of the parties in the two cases raised concerns about Connors' involvement or asked for her recusal.
The bottom line is that a judge has to be given a fair amount of discretion to be able to make this sort of call and determine whether the judge can sit impartially.
But McArdle and the committee counter that Connors only consulted the Advisory Committee on Judicial Ethics months after hearing oral arguments in the first case. And McArdle says the Ethics Committee only issued an informal decision and argues that if it had been given more information, would have ruled that Connors should recuse.
It's one of several facts that when you put them together, it just doesn't look right. It doesn't mean that Justice Connors had bad intent. It doesn't mean Justice Connors was biased. That's not the issue. It looks bad.
McArdle also points to comments Connors made in her confirmation hearing, saying she expected significant recusals in foreclosure cases and in questionable situations would, quote, err on the side of recusal. McArdle also notes that Connors has a financial stake in the law firm Pierce Atwood, and the firm is an affiliate member of the Maine Bankers Association, which he argues would benefit from the court's rulings in the two foreclosure cases.
It looks bad because the facts suggest the question, can this judge be fair?
The Committee on Judicial Conduct is asking a 5-member panel of district and superior court judges to reprimand Connors. It's a new process for the disciplinary complaint, which previously would have been considered by the remaining members of the Maine Supreme Court, but the court amended the process this year after the committee made its report on Connors. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Bedayan.
A behavioral health service provider in Maine is rejecting claims by a former employee that the organization submitted false billing records to MaineCare. As Ari Snyder reports, Gateway Community Services says the claims and media reports have exposed it to broader attacks on Somali immigrants.
Christopher Bernardini first made the allegations to the conservative media outlet The Maine Wire in May, shortly after he was laid off, according to Gateway's lawyer, Powell Binchik. In a written statement, Binchik says Bernardini oversaw billing records for multiple programs and never raised concerns about, quote, inaccurate billing, fraud, or impropriety during his 7 years at Gateway. Gateway's CEO is from Somalia, and Bernardini's allegations have recently attracted national attention following a fraud scandal in Minnesota involving Somali community groups and President Trump's attacks on Somali immigrants. Binchik says Gateway employees have received death threats as the story has spread. In an email, a Maine Department of Health and Human Services spokesperson says audits covering 2015 to 2018 found overpayments to Gateway totaling about $660,000, though a partial appeal is pending. Binchik says those audits are standard procedure and that after providing additional documentation, the final billing discrepancy is often much smaller. He says none of the audits have implicated Gateway for services it did not provide. DHHS says it refers any suspected fraud to the Attorney General's office. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
Meantime, hundreds of people rallied in Lewiston on Saturday in support of the state's Somali community, a response to President Trump's recent comments that Somali immigrants are, quote, garbage that he doesn't want in the country. Most attendees were not Somali, but say they turned out to show their solidarity. The event also drew a long roster of elected officials and candidates. Ari Snyder has this additional report.
The rally was organized by Safiya Khalid, a former Lewiston city councilor who became the first Somali-American to hold that role when she was elected in 2019. Saturday, she addressed a crowd circled around the gazebo in Lewiston's snow-covered Kennedy Park downtown, delivering her response to Trump's attacks.
We are here today to say something clearly and without apology. We are not going anywhere.
Khalid drew a historical comparison between today's anti-Somali rhetoric and past waves of xenophobia and discrimination against Irish and French-Canadian immigrants in Maine.
Every generation has seen a community scapegoated, blamed, and dehumanized in moments of fear and political convenience. And history has never been kind to those who stay silent or looked away while that harm unfolded.
What do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
When immigrants are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
The crowd followed Khalid on a short march through the park and recongregated in a nearby church. On stage, South Portland State Representative Deka Dalak, a Democrat and one of three Somali Americans serving in the legislature, says the president's attacks and aggressive immigration enforcement tactics have sent shockwaves of fear through many immigrant families.
But we will not shrink. We will not be intimidated. We will not let someone else's hatred define who we are.
Khalid, Dalak, and other Somali Americans were not the only public figures to defend the Somali community. The lineup of speakers included a long list of Democratic and independent elected officials and candidates exhorting the crowd to stand up for their Somali neighbors.
In Maine, we look after each other. It's how we live. And when one of us is attacked, when a community is targeted, that's an attack on all of us. And that's why we are here today.
State Senator Rick Bennett, a former Republican, is currently running for governor as an independent. He says Maine can and should lead by example.
We lead with decency and dignity. We lead with courage. And when the rest of the country is pulled toward fear and division, Maine will show a better way forward.
Other speakers included Democratic Senate hopeful Graham Plattner, Democratic gubernatorial candidate Troy Jackson, and Secretary of State Shenna Bellows, who is also seeking the Democratic nomination for governor. And while the event also featured Somali food and a performance by a local Somali dance group, the city's Somali residents were notably absent from the mostly white crowd. Amran Osman, who runs a local nonprofit focused on the mental health struggles of immigrant youth, says she believes that many in the community stayed home out of fear amid what she says is a flood of online vitriol.
People were afraid of, okay, what if somebody shoots us or something happens? Because just seeing all that hatred, like people are telling us, go back to your country, you guys don't belong here.
Osman, who is Somali-American, says she's received online death threats herself, but showed up anyway.
I think that I owe it to the youth that I work with and my community that to be here and to stick up for our community, because if I'm not fighting for them, who's going to?
Wrapping up the rally, Sophia Khalid says it means a lot to her that so many non-Somalis came out in support.
Thank you to every ally, each and every one of you, who showed up today with care and intention. Your solidarity matters, and it does not go unnoticed.
Trump, she says, made clear what he thinks of Somalis in the U.S. with his denigrating remarks. Organizing this rally, she says, was her way of offering a response.
You may think that of us, but let me show you what Mainers think of us.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
A group of Maine lobstermen last week worked out a plan for how they would respond to an aggregation of endangered North Atlantic right whales in federal waters. Last January, an unusually large number of whales surprised fishermen and scientists when they showed up in part of the southern Gulf of Maine known as Jeffrey's Ledge. As Nora Sachs reports, Maine lobstermen who fish in those waters want to be better prepared if it happens again.
About two dozen lobstermen turned up at the American Legion Hall in Kennebunkport Wednesday night. Many of them, including John Noonan of Cape Porpoise, remember last January clearly.
It was stressful.
That's because a lot of his lobster gear was located right where more than 90 right whales happened to be congregating. They hung around for weeks, and scientists think they were probably feeding. Fishermen in Zone G, which stretches from Elliott to Cape Elizabeth, decided their best option was to reduce the number of vertical ropes in the water by removing one of two end lines attached to their trawl, a move which is usually against regulation. But in this case, enforcement officials made an exception.
It was our fastest and quickest way for us in our area to do something to help not entangle a whale.
That strategy, plus other risk reduction measures lobstermen are already required to have in place, seemed to have worked. But as one young fisherman put it, the industry's response felt like an organized scramble. At Wednesday's informal meeting, the fishermen in the room made a proactive gentleman's pact to take those same precautions and possibly more if the whales return.
As fishermen, we're stewards of the sea. I mean, we're out there, we see what's going on all the time.
Zone G Council Chairman and lobsterman Chris Welch of Kennebunk organized the meeting.
We don't want to interact with the whales physically in any type. We want to avoid them. We don't want any harm to them or any contact. So what we've done in the past and what we're doing now is the right thing. We're trying to avoid them.
At the meeting, staff from Maine's Department of Marine Resources assured lobstermen they're keeping a close eye and ear on whale activity this winter through periodic aerial and boat surveys and a new acoustic monitoring tool that glides around listening for whales. If right whales are detected, especially in double-digit numbers, DMR says it will contact fishermen with gear in that area and get the word out to license holders. DMR's policy coordinator, Aaron Wilkinson, says the agency is there to support fishermen and, where appropriate, make recommendations.
We don't have an authority right now to be able to do a closure or some or any other action sort of in response to that right now. So anything fishermen do would be voluntary. So we will work with them to convene a meeting if needed, connect them with Marine Patrol. We will do our best to communicate information out as quickly as we can.
So far, officials have linked only one right whale death directly to entanglement in lobster gear from Maine. But the industry is concerned that more incidents could trigger stricter federal regulations. State regulators say the feds could consider this type of dynamic management, where industry and agencies cooperate and respond to real conditions on the ground, when it decides how best to protect the species over the next few years. Now that there's a general plan in place, lobsterman John Noonan said he's feeling better about the prospect of right whales returning to the southern Gulf of Maine this winter, but that doesn't mean he'd be happy about it.
I'm just hoping they don't show up. I'm hoping they don't come back into Jeffries. They stay outside, they go somewhere else.
Typically, North Atlantic right whales spend their winters feeding in Cape Cod Bay or in their calving grounds in the southeast. But recently, they've been more unpredictable, and only the whales know where they'll show up next. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nora Sachs.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, Living with a Disability. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.